feel the rhythm of the breath as it comes in and it moves out. Moving in and moving out. Feel the breath moving up and down, side to side. The master of the breath has the ability to control the direction of the breath, the vastness of the breath, the focus of the breath, the penetration of the breath. Today's session will deal again with an aspect of the breath. The master of breath becomes the master of oneself. When one masters oneself, all things are mastered. So in a few moments, we will rise and we'll say a few prayers. And for those that are Sufi initiates, you will know these prayers. They will be familiar to you. And for those that are not, who have been here with us, you may be new, but there's obviously an interest. And so these prayers are not like any other prayers. Prayer is prayer. They center and concentrate on the divine being, and in that way they have a common force or direction as any other prayer. If the prayers are unfamiliar to you, just let them wash over you like a gentle ocean wave, and take in what feels proper to take in and what doesn't. Just leave it. No compulsion. However, for those that are initiates, keep this in mind. Hazrat Anayat Khan said the prayers, especially the morning and the afternoon prayer, are the two pillars on which the whole of the Sufi philosophy is built. And if one thinks about that, we have to then come to the point of understanding that Sufism, although some people want to categorize it as such, is really not a religion. Hazrat Anayat Khan says this. It's a philosophy. It's an attitude towards life. So in the morning prayer, like other forms of prayer, it is a glorification. It is a prayer of glorification and aspiration, calling upon the divine presence. And the noon prayer if I remember, we'll also say that at some point during the class. But it is a prayer that invokes all the holy names and forms of the religions of the East and of the West, and even those unknown. And in that way, it creates a kind of culture where one is open to others' opinions, to others' forms of worship, to others' ideals. They may be different than ours, but we have an accommodation. This is the Sufi way. We don't draw a line in the sand and says this is that and that is that. It's a path of inclusion, a path of respect for others. And so we will begin with the Sufi invocation, and I will say a couple words because I know there are new people. There is a line of the prayer that says, that forms the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. I want to be very clear here. We're not worshiping a Master. We're worshiping the Master, or you could say Mistress, of the whole universe. The Divine Being who formed the embodiment. Embodiment meaning embodiment, the embodiment of all the masters, saints, and prophets, whatever the tradition is, who formed the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance, that Spirit of Guidance that finds its way through the mouths of men and women, holy men and women. That's the Spirit of Guidance, and that illuminates other souls. So please don't be confused by these words and think that we're worshiping some sort of master somewhere. It's not that at all. So the front of our home is the East, and in all traditions, it is, you may not be aware of it, but the churches are oriented in that way, so that when we pray, we face the light, calling upon the light. So we'll rise and we'll face the East. And the prayers are done also, Hazar and I, come on, says, to, the prayers are done looking straight ahead, not eyes closed and all etheric, so straight ahead. And there are some movements to the prayers. And if you'd like to move with us, that's fine. The movements are very graceful. It's kind of like anyone that might practice yoga, you know, salutations to the sun are done in a beautiful, you know, gesture. So the prayers are also done in that way, not, you know, like some sort of funny, I don't know what that would be, but we don't do it that way. So I would ask that you not do it that way, because by doing the prayers in a graceful way, it brings about, it beautifies one's character and one's manner. It teaches us how to be gracious and graceful. So the first gesture for the invocation, you can just put your hands, cup them here. You know, I like it, you're a little bit lower, below your belly button. Okay. This is the solar plexus. Said to be the power center, but you know, if this power center is, a lot of times you see people big old tummies, you wonder, do they have some sort of shield there, or some sort of a guard around that power center? You think about it, and sometimes the older we get, the more poochy we get there. It's probably a matter of just the condition of getting older, but it also could be that the ego gets more and more developed, and we get more fixated in who we think we are, and we have to insulate it. You understand what I'm saying to you? But this center, all the yogic traditions say that when this center, now I'm pointing to my solar plexus, my belly button area for the people at home, they say that when that center is awakened, and an icon also says that, when that center is awakened, the seed of intuition and insight are awakened. But when it's not awakened, it's the place of ego. Everything has light and shadow. So we're cupping this area, and we're imagining that there's this light that's flowing down and filling this beautiful cup. We're cupping our hands, receptive. And at the end of the prayer, we'll take the cup and we pour it upon ourselves like a blessing. Towards the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. Now imagine that you have the most precious cup of golden light here, that when you rise it up, raise it up, and pour it upon yourself, that everything you ever wished for and everything you ever prayed for is being given to you, and you're being filled with it. Everything, prosperity, health, love, openings, wisdom, everything's there. Pour it upon yourself. And then the morning prayer, which is called Psalm, S-A-U-M, Psalm. Praise ye to thee, most supreme God, omnipotent, omnipresent, all-pervading, the only being. Take us in thy parental arms. Raise us from the denseness of the earth. Thy beauty do we worship. And to thee do we give willing surrender. Most merciful and compassionate God, the idealized Lord of the whole of humanity, thee only do we worship, and towards thee alone do we aspire. And then the gesture is this: open our hearts towards thy beauty, illuminate our souls with divine light. Open our hearts towards thy beauty, illuminate our souls with divine light. You see, this hand is touching the left side of the heart, and this hand touches the right side of the heart. We're acknowledging the divinity in its aspect of the feminine and the masculine. Open our hearts towards thy beauty, the feminine dimension. Illuminate our souls with divine light, that spark, the masculine dimension. Every gesture has a meaning. I would hope that each one of us grow that conscious. That every movement, everything we say has meaning. There's so much energy that can be wasted. We don't do things with purpose. And then what happens after this is we make this gesture in silence. And we think internally, this is not my body. This is the temple of God. So we'll begin that part again. Open our hearts towards thy beauty. Illuminate our souls with divine light. O thou, who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, all-powerful, creator, sustainer, judge and forgiver of our shortcomings, Lord God of the East and of the West, of the worlds above and below, of the seen and unseen, close your eyes, unseen beings, turn the vision within momentarily, of the seen and the unseen beings, pour upon us thy love and thy light. Give sustenance to our bodies, hearts, and souls. Use us for the purpose that thy wisdom chooseth, and guide us on the path of thine own goodness. Draw us closer to thee.
And the gesture comes here again.
Draw us closer to thee every moment of our life, one life, until in us be reflected thy grace, thy glory, thy wisdom, thy joy, and thy peace.
Take again and pour this golden light, and we raise our hands and while we say, it feel lovely. You see, the prayers are lovely. You would be surprised how many people tell me, I don't have a feeling for these prayers. I don't like to say them. I'm always very surprised. I think, how can you not want to say something like this? If nothing else, I would say the prayers every day. Even someone that's interested in the path, I don't know you're not initiated, are you? You know, it'll bring you closer to it.
Where does one find copies of it?
We have some things available that we can talk about afterwards. Karim and Gita can help you. Thank you, sweetheart. So I'd like to read a few words about the prayers. It's two short paragraphs, and it's the words of Hazranaya Khan, and these are from the collective interviews. And I always like to tell people, these were sort of the most, I feel, vital teachings that he gave, because they were given in the last 2 years of his life. And in one of the interviews, it's very apparent that he is giving it's not here, but in another one, a kind of a prophecy that he would be coming no more, that he was leaving. And it was true. He went to India and he left his mortal body. So this is from the collective interviews of Hazranaya Khan. These are unpublished papers, so I share them with you as a sacred trust. And this is from June 21st, 1926. So just maybe 8 months before his passing. He always had it noted on what day of the week this was given, and if you know much about the Eastern tradition, there is a very close parallel to astrological influences for each day of the week. And this was given on Monday or Moon Day. I would suspect, therefore, it was when he was hoping his students were perhaps the most receptive, because this is from a paper on signs that would be given for instruction papers as practices are given to murids or students. This section is from that paper. I'm only reading the section that is called The Prayers, Psalm and Salat. He says, it is also necessary for every member of the inner school to receive Psalm and Salat. He's been talking about practices and what's standard for everyone. But besides Psalm and Salat, Salat is the noonday prayer. Now there come in the Vedan, which is a text by Hazranaya Khan, three added prayers. For the first three initiations, of which there are 12 initiations, those that are initiates know that, perhaps. For the first three initiations, the prayer which is headed by the word peer, P-I-R, meaning teacher, must be given. After that, which is headed Nabi, N-A-B-I, which means prophet, may be given to the advanced circle. And the inner circle, the prayer which is called Rasul, which is messenger, may be given. Now here's what's important. And the psychological and mystical significance of these prayers is to balance the power of song. And the psychological and mystical significance of these prayers is to balance the power of psalm, the prayer that we just said. The power of psalm is very great. And for all the members, the power of salat balances the power of psalm. But the members who are initiated, so we can have members, we can have associates, we can have people in the brotherhood and sisterhood activity. Those people are not necessarily initiated into the inner school. It's different. But the members who are initiated and are becoming more ethereal every day, which can happen, for them the power of psalm is too great. In order to balance, there must be a negative prayer. Meaning, like masculine and feminine, solar and lunar. Okay. Psalm is positive, and the other four are negative. So, unless we have an inkling of the mystical aspect of the prayer, it would be wise, I would think, to say these prayers every day, just to get a little glimpse of what's being said here. Are there any questions? No?
I'm not quite sure how to word the question. Just the sense that he's reminding us to seek a balance of things, and that.
Always a balance.
Yeah.
Whoever's listening at home, if you want to unmute and ask a question, if there is one, please feel free to do that. Anyone there have a question? Shall I go on? Mm-hmm. Shall we go on? To offer another small reading, and it's about purification, because in my classes we've been focusing a lot on this purification breath, but I wanted to give another view, another aspect of the emphasis on purification. And this reading is from the reading called the Gathas, and it's on everyday life. I think it's marvelous that Hazrat Ali Khan also gives this body of teachings that talks to us about things on everyday life and moral culture and insight and the art of personality, that these are all things that help us become more developed or more holistic, perhaps more balanced is a good word. That it's not only the outer life we're concerned with, nor is it only the inner life that we're concerned with, but there's a balance there. And how to find that? How do those touch each other and inform each other? Does that make sense? I want to backtrack because there was something I wanted to read, but I think I still find it. First thing, and several of these little readings in this text I'd like to read on have to do with silence. But first I'd like to read a few of the headings here. Halima, have you ever paid attention? I know you just received this as a gift, but it was Nurid's arriving at Seren before the silent meaning, Nurid's returning from the silent meaning, Murshid returning from the silent meeting. So there was a lot of emphasis given to silence. There's a lot of noise we all deal with. Heather, you have an opportunity to deal with that silent world, don't you? You give language to it, in a way.
It's interesting, because I was thinking, yes, there's a lot of noise.
There is a lot of noise.
That I filter through. So
absolutely, when you're signing.
Trying to block all that noise out.
Yeah. Exactly, and get to what the essence is, the real message, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And I feel like in our culture, there's just so much noise, and having to figure out what noise to put aside and what to pay attention to. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And in a way, it's also understanding, you know, a little bit sometimes before our class, I get a little, an energetic jolt, and then there was a lot of noise in the house before the class begins. I can find my feeling that can arise is a kind of impatience about that, that I would rather it be a more reverent atmosphere when people come into the home. But at any rate, then I said to myself, well, it's just really energy, and I can use it to develop further concentration. That people have to expel that energy, perhaps before the class can begin. But it's an interesting thing to observe, and also it's with that way with just noise and quotes, you know, that there it's energy at one form, and how do we use it? Can we use it to transform ourselves in a way? This is from that book that Hazrat and Icon previously mentioned in the Vedan, and this is from the Gamakas. And the Gamakas can be translated as the feelings of the poet's heart keyed to various musical notes. The feelings of the poet's heart keyed to various musical notes. And this is the quote. People often ask me questions which I cannot very well answer in words, and it makes me sad to think they are unable to hear the voice of my silence. People often ask me questions which I cannot very well answer in words, and it makes me sad to think they are unable to hear the voice of my silence. Now, a few quotes from the Flower Garden of Inayat Khan. The ears of whose heart have listened to the word of God have first accomplished stillness in their life. And what an atmosphere such a person can produce. What effect their presence has. It is more than healing, more than medicine. A man with a perfectly stilled and comforted and rested mind will at once raise up another who is going through distress or restlessness or pains or ill temper or worry or anxiety. The very presence of one whose mind is stilled gives such hope, such inspiration, such sympathy, such power and life. All the heavenly properties run so smoothly and so freely from the person whose mind is stilled that his words, his voice, his presence all react upon the minds of others. And as he stills his mind, so his very presence becomes healed. There's a beautiful picture here. I don't know if you can see it, where it looks like it's before a meal. There's people sitting in a circle, and there's plates. And it looks like perhaps they're going to have some tea or something to eat. And they're with Marcia praying quietly. So a few quotes from this book, and again, it's a beautiful little picture here. It's kind of in the mist, and it's this special tree that I understand, when you look at some of the archival photos, it's an apricot tree that grew there in Saran, in the area of the home that Hazrat Anay Khan lived in, and that was the tree where he would meet with his students, and he would give initiations there. So this is very important that I should say this, because these little quotes are about nature and about the tree. So, he says, "Sublime nature, let my heart find rest in thy stillness. Sublime nature, let my heart find rest in thy stillness." This is so beautiful. "My heart, as a tree in the forest, stands patiently waiting. My heart, as a tree in the forest, stands patiently waiting." And so we have to ask ourselves, what are we waiting for patiently? For each person, the answer will be different, I think. But for the Sufi, it's to have that experience of God. And sometimes we have to wait and be prepared for that opening. God is always here. We are part of that. Sometimes we just don't realize it. And the last quote says, "Trees are more holier and spiritual than most men. Their purpose is to give some contribution to life, and they are continually busy fulfilling their purpose. They feel that joy and satisfaction which man cannot feel until he attains to their stage of stillness and peace." Shall I read it again? Mm-hmm. "Trees are more holy and more spiritual than some men." He doesn't say all, but then some men and women also he's meaning there. "Their purpose is to give some contribution to life." You know, not just taking. I want this, I want that, give me this, please, I need to know, I have, you know, none of that. They're standing still, waiting. Like this, "stands patiently waiting. My heart, as a tree in the forest, stands patiently waiting." You know, my God, what would happen if those trees, well, we've seen it in some of those shows, Lord of the Rings, where the trees start marching around. But, you know, I mean, the thing is it gives you a funny view of how it could be if I mean, how man is in a way, these marching trees, it animates them so that we start to see a little bit, because we're part of nature, and because we have that freedom and free will, it takes its toll. It takes its toll. So then again, trees are more holy and spiritual than some men. Their purpose is to give some contribution to life. Now here I have to tell a story. I was traveling in India, responsible, co-facilitating a pilgrimage with some women. A friend of mine in California and I had maybe 20 women, if you remember, Kriyamati, 20 some of them. And we were had the privilege of staying in an ashram, Sri Aurobindo Ashram, and there's a very special holy woman that lives there. Her name's Krutamayi. By the way, she extends her regards. I spoke to her when I did last Sunday. She's in California doing some work there. She asked about many of you that know. But anyway, this one woman on the tour had an affinity towards Karunaji, Karunamayi Ma. And so she said to her, "Oh, tell me how I can get more time with her. How I can get more time with her. How I can get something." You understand what I'm saying there in those words? People do it to me all the time. "I want to know something. Tell me this." And I said to her, "Who do you think you are? That Karunaji has time for you to come and just sit and she's going to serve you tea?" I said, "That's the wrong question. The question is, how can I serve Karunaji? That's how you're going to get time with her. Ask her, can I help you with something?" Really, think about it. I mean, she could go and clean her floor. She could go and make her tea. Karunaji is a saint, I believe, and she suffers in her own body as many saints do. And I said, "You ask if you could massage her feet or do something to help her be more comfortable. Then you have all the time you want. But if you think you're going to go and be entertained, well, then that's something else, isn't it?" And you know, it ended up that she really took that to heart. And the woman who was working in the field of psychology in Boston took a leave of absence and went to live at the ashram and really served Karunaji. And in that way, she got very close to her. I know some of you understand this. And some of you can understand this and live it in a very quiet way. Other people might not notice. But I can tell you I notice. Their purpose is to give some contribution to life, and they are continually busy fulfilling their purpose. They feel that joy and satisfaction which man cannot feel until he attains to their stage of stillness and peace. From the teaching of the Gathas on everyday life, purification. Man's health and inspiration both depend upon purity of breath. And to preserve this purity, The nostrils and all the tubes of the breath must be clear. All the tubes of the breath must be clear. They can be kept clear by proper breathing and by proper ablutions. They can be kept clear by proper breathing and by proper ablutions. If one cleanses the nostrils twice or more often during 24 hours, it is not too much. Are there people in the room that has no idea what I'm talking about? You can do it that way, or there are other ways, and I can talk about it in a moment. For a Muslim, and he's talking about in that tradition, separate from the Sufi tradition, but one that is appreciated, it is taught to make these ablutions 5 times a day before each prayer. And again, I've talked about this before in other classes. We have some symbology of this even in the, for example, the Catholic Church. You have you go in and you dip your finger and you make the sign of the... It's a gesture of remembrance of cleansing and blessing. In India, you'll see before some of the holy places, even in the Dargah of Murshids, Dargah and Inayat Khan, you walk into the garden area and there is a fountain there. People don't use it in that way. They look at it, but it's truly meant to be able to offer as water for bathing. And you'll see that in front of many of the shrines, a kind of circular fountain with water in it. When I was in Morocco, I covered my head and gave the profession of faith and was admitted into the mosque. And then I was taken to an area where there were 3 very long, probably as long as this room, consecutive in length, all tile, beautiful tile, and they're the very low pools for bathing before you enter into the mosque. So there's a very big significance given to that. The cleansing not only of the nostrils but also of the ears, for part of the breath works through the ears. You know how that's true when you have a funny thing going on with your breath, the ears do funny things. And if the ears are not protected and cleansed, sometimes one hears a sound, which often it is the breath, which does not find its way smoothly through the region. So you'll hear, because it's sort of stuck there. And I know my mom is so good, and she's also always tells me, and I do practice that because I think it's important, you know, when it's very windy out or if it's cold, you know, good to have a cap over it or put cotton in the ears or something to protect that channel. Now, as for ablutions, the traditional way that they're done is if you would have a pool, and you don't need to get caught in the instruction, but you can kind of hear the method. You start by dipping your hand in the water like this, and you allow the water to flow from the cup of your hand down your elbows. Now imagine, this has come from a tradition where people were nomadic or traveled in dusty desert areas before they entered a church. We don't have that so much now. But it's still good to think about that. At the spring camp recently, Murshida Mariam gave the ablutions with light. And so one could do that as well. And then, so one does this and takes the water, and then one does it to the other arm, and then one takes it in the nostril. And it's usually done 4 or 5 times. And then in the other nostril, just hand and water can do it. Then the mouth, rinse and spit. Then the face, then kind of up over the head and back around the neck, and then the feet, and then entering. So just that can be also this gesture that we did of just bringing the light and purifying. But she did that, remember? She did the eyes and the mouth and the ears. And
what was Noor, what was the...
Was it Noor Allah? No.
I
think it was Noor Allah. Yes, I think it was the light of God, bringing in the light of God. Wasn't it Noor Allah? I think it was. Yeah. Yeah, and different traditions do different things, but this is what Mershit's referring to here. And even in the Vedic tradition, you know, they do it just by touching, you know, with this finger, the gentle finger, those parts. And for those at home, I'm touching the eyes, the nostrils, the ears, different sides of the mouth, the throat, the heart, the crown. The throat and the palate are also important factors for the flow of the breath. And we know this is true because if we get mucusy back there, the breath doesn't flow. The palate and throat are kept clean by the adept by gargling. So again, swishing. The adept drinks water at fixed times for the purpose of cleansing the veins and the tubes in the chest, so that the breath may find pure channels for its passage. An adept drinks water before going to bed and after rising from sleep. I can tell you that most people I know in the East drink hot water, boiled water, not cold water. It is necessary that these laws, and that could be a hygienic thing, but I think it's also very, they say that that's why in Europe people aren't often as obese as we are, because they have soup as a part of the culture before they eat. And when you have something warm in your stomach, it gives a different message than something cold. And it makes you feel more full, and so you have the tendency not to eat so much. So you can imagine you have a little hot soup, a little bit of wine, a little piece of bread, you're kind of full. You know, you don't need so much food.
Ice water, it takes you a half an hour for your stomach to calm down to that food.
It's a shock. Cold. I'm even sensitive to watering the plants. Like, I don't take the very cold water. You know, I let it be more moderate. And they seem to be much happier with that. So an adept drinks water before going to bed and after rising from sleep. It is necessary that these laws of ablution should be protected by the student of thought first in order that others may follow. Hygienic condition or considerations is the first principle which is necessary for health and happiness of the generality. I'm a bit of a fanatic about the housekeeping. Hygienic considerations is the first principle, which is necessary for health and happiness. Mm-hmm.